Prime Minister Mania, and the Dutch officials will be attending on his behalf. Ms. Bashlaja Schiff and Mr. Nonyati. Okay. Before we start, I'm just going to ask that all the officials first introduce themselves, and then I'll ask the members to introduce themselves. And AXA will then do a presentation to us. I will then open for a question and answer session. I will allow for 3 questions, and then I'll allow you guys to ask and then do another round of questions so there's not too much at the same time. And then after that, I'll excuse you guys so that we can then go on with the resolutions and actions. I just want to ask then if we can also then include on the agenda the consideration and adoption of draft committee minutes from previous meetings as well. But yes, thank you.
Good morning, everyone. It's DJ Davis. I'm a part of the AXA team at Cape Town International Airport. It's really great to be here today.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dion Kluter. I'm with Deirdre, part of the team there at Cape Town. I must say, Chair, we're really pleased to be here. Thank you for the invitation. I know it was short notice. You had us running around there in all directions, but we're very happy to be here. And just to share a bit about our story, we think it's an exciting one. So thank you for the opportunity.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sibusiso Nonyati from the Department of Economic Development and Tourism, Project Manager in a Catalytic Infrastructure Project.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Bianca Mpatlaza-Schiff from the Department of Economic Development and Tourism, of which AXIS is one of our outstanding projects.
I'll perhaps the members introduce themselves.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Daylan Mitchell.
Good morning, Governor. Ricardo McKenzie.
Andriques from the Bay Station.
Good morning, I'm Nomingondo.
And the members, the community members and other officials of the back can introduce themselves.
Hi, everybody. My name is Zuzo Tumakada from PMG.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tsego Lepole. I'm with Independent Media.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Ryan Smith. I'm the Head of Research for the DAR.
Good morning, everyone. This is Executive Senior Procedural Officer.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to jump right in into your presentation. And it's fine if you can sit, as long as you just use the mic.
Okay, great. So thank you very much. As Dion said earlier, it's really great to have the opportunity. We always value the opportunity to talk about the airport business. Everybody that works at an airport, they say that there's something about aviation. It gets into your blood, and once you are part of that system, it's very difficult to leave it. So we love talking about all things airport. Before we hone in and talk about Cape Town International Airport specifically, as you know, we are part of a much broader network of airports within the AXA stable. We look after the 9 principal airports in South Africa, but we also have a growing international footprint, which is something that we are especially proud of, and it's a part of a business strategy that we are actively driving to be able to share knowledge and skills that we have and to be a part of concession arrangements or concession agreements in other parts of the world, which is not only good for our business as AXA, but it's also good for the country, because what it says is that in South Africa there are leaders in the aviation industry that are able to competently and capably work in other areas of aviation across the globe. So through our airports in South Africa specifically, our country enjoys excellent connectivity. We have wide-reaching routes across various continents, and we see our airports as socioeconomic catalysts to growth in the regions which they serve. We also speak a lot about how the future of cities and regions will be their airports. similarly to how in the days of old you found cities built around seaports, then you found them built around railports, and we know that the future will be airports. So if we then move a little bit closer and talk specifically about Cape Town Airport, we think that Cape Town Airport is a strategic asset in the region, and we really hope that the results showcase that. And while the numbers are particularly impressive in terms of the contribution made to the economy of South Africa, it's also about the opportunities that are created by being able to leverage one's airport. And that really is something that as an airports company we are continuing to drive, so that we make a meaningful contribution to the local economies within which the airports exist. So a quick snapshot of Cape Town Airport. We are very proud of the fact that it's actually Africa's most award-winning airport. We received the World Travel Award for Best Airport in Africa this year. We picked it up in Mauritius, and that was the third year running that we received the award. We've also been nominated Skytrax Best Airport in Africa for 4 years running. But our eyes are on the global stage. We don't just want to be the best airport in Africa. We very much want to be competing with other international airports. So we have a ranking of the 22nd best airport in Africa, and that is a ranking that we, 22nd best airport in the world, excuse me, and that is something that we watch very closely, particularly with the aim to be able to improve that. We're proud of the fact that there's an on-time performance of, in the region, 85%. And on peak days, we can process as many as 40,000 passengers a day, move up to 20,000 pieces of luggage, and the airlines can use up to 2.2 million liters of aviation fuel. That in itself is quite significant. So the airport is a complex environment. Every day there are over 100 brands that need to come together and choreograph this airport showcase so that the passenger from start to end can have as seamless an experience as possible. We know that there are often times that we don't get it 100% correct, and this is why, particularly as AXA, we place a very big focus on collaboration and on cooperation. One of the things we do, as an example, tomorrow we will be together with the leadership of the different entities that make up the airport value chain. So from the airlines to the car hire, to the retailers, to the baggage handlers, we will be together in a room and talk about what our peak season will look like. Our conversation tomorrow with this some 200 people will be especially around the pending construction plans. This all with the intention of creating a common situational awareness so that everybody understands the role that they need to play in the value chain, and so that people can play it to the best of their ability. And there are some 10,000 permit holders that is a part of this airport experience. So our core source markets is the UK, followed by Germany, and then also the States. And that has been the picture for quite a long time. What we are also seeing is increasing growth in the African market, which is really fantastic. And I mentioned South Africa's connectivity at the onset of the presentation, and then Cape Town as well has got excellent connectivity, and we'll talk a little bit about that in the next slide. But just to show you that the split is 76-24, with domestic still being the predominant traffic out of Cape Town. Bianca mentioned the Air Access program. It is definitely an initiative that we are very proud of. We're very proud of the partnership that we have with the provincial government. The program has seen significant success since its inception. You can see I speak about 50 new routes and 20 route expansions through this program. You can connect directly to cities like Vienna. You can fly directly from Cape Town to Hong Kong. We are really looking forward to 16 December will be the inaugural flight for United Airlines. Cape Town will be directly connected to New York. That in itself, I know you would be aware, has been such a big coup for our region. we also never underestimate when airlines make a commitment to choose to travel to our destination, especially because of how competitive it is with other regions and also because of how sensitive tourism is. So a big focus for the Air Access team is also to not only work on attracting and bringing new routes into the city, but to also work on retaining the routes which already exist. And this is definitely a partnership and a collaboration where the results speak for themselves. So it is very fitting that on the back of the significant growth that we've seen in passenger numbers, that the airport also triggers its expansion program. Airports typically plan well in advance. We undergo a process which we call master planning so that we've got a long-term future view of what the plans for the airport precinct should be. And we are now on the cusp of a significant build program for Cape Town Airport. Three key projects is the realignment of our runway. We are building, doing work on our domestic terminal as well as the international terminal. And all three sets of programs will result in quite a significant impact and also make a positive contribution to our local economy. And we talk about an investment in the region of 7 billion rand. This picture is conceptual. It is a master plan conceptual picture. There is no particular date to it. It just signifies what the long-term, far future dream of the airport could be. We talk about a crown perspective with three piers. So I mentioned the runway project as being quite a significant project. We will move the runway. We will build a runway further eastward, and we will rotate it by 11 and a half degrees. And this project is all about growth. The essence of this project is about growth, and it's not only about growth for the airport, because currently the runway is set too close to the terminal building, so we actually need to move it further onto the airfield so that we can enable the future terminal expansion. We will, at the end of this construction period, be able to handle larger aircraft. So we talk about the Code F aircraft, like your big Airbus A380s. But we will also be able to handle more aircraft landing and departures. So that is all about enabling growth. But the growth that this will enable for the region is the capability to have the capacity to handle more air access into Cape Town. And that, as we know, is absolutely significant. It took us 3 years to secure environmental authorization. It was an extensive process. But we got the green light from the Department of Environmental Affairs. We are very happy to report that the tender for the runway project has been advertised. And if all things go according to plan, we hope to have a contractor on site early in the new year. It is quite a complex project and will take in the region of 24 months. And then we build in a further time period for commissioning, just to make sure that by the time we commission the runway, it is actually able to manage the traffic. Then the work on the terminal expansion, domestic arrivals. This is a project that we are particularly excited about. We are often criticized around the long walk to freedom. You could park your aircraft at a certain point and make quite a trek to get to the baggage hall and then sort of backtrack to exit the terminal building. So one of the things that will come as a result of this project is what we call an express route. We think that Cape Town especially is going to be very happy with this express route. We will also increase the capacity in the baggage claim area. Believe it or not, that area is not big enough as it is. And then we will do some improvements to the broader arrivals concourse. Construction again, we hope to start construction in early 2020. The tender for this project is imminent and will most probably be released in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then this as well will be a 2.5 year estimated construction program. This is also one of those projects certainly where it is our intention and our plan to make sure that we communicate upfront people have especially high expectations when they traverse an airport, so it is important that we try to manage expectations up front. These are just artist impressions. They are not a perspective of what the final result will be, but it gives you a good indication. You can't really see, but I think on your pictures you're able to get a fair perspective. That escalator is just an indication of what that express route could look like, and that's then an airside perspective. The international terminal development, this is quite a big one for us. We call the international terminal Terminal 2. It's one of the oldest buildings next to what we call Terminal 5. There's a portion that will be demolished, and in a way, for those of us who have been in Cape Town for a long, long time, you know, there's something special about these old buildings. I don't have a pack, I don't have it in the pack, but we've got a beautiful picture of what the airport looked like in 1965, and she's really come a long way since then. And after these construction programs, our airport would have transformed quite significantly once again. And we often talk about the fact that it's nearly 10 years on. The last time we went into a major build program was ahead of the Soccer World Cup. And now nearly 10 years on, we're about to embark on the same process. When we complete work on the international terminal, we will have a larger immigration area. That area is certainly in need of added capacity. We spoke previously about the increased routes that we have, the increased connectivity, especially on the international front. And what that means is that there's also pressure on the system as a result. Ultimately, this will bring some much-needed relief on that system. We'll increase the baggage area. We'll also have provision. We spoke about the runway will enable the ability to handle the larger aircraft. But you can't just have the runway in a position to deal with larger aircraft. All of your other systems also need to be able to handle larger aircraft. So we will have baggage vaults, for example, that can manage that capacity. Nearly 2.5 weeks ago, we released the tender for what we call the enablement works, and it's really the tender that will help us be in a position to get to the main works project. We've split it up in that regard. Perhaps something to flag to the committee is that something quite significant around this is that we will have to move our current meters and greeters area. We're going to relocate that into the parkade area. It's going to sit in Parkade 1. The team is working very hard to make sure that that experience is not going to be a parkade experience. That is quite a big element in the tender. And then if all goes according to plan, we hope to be in a position to commission the ultimate development in 2024. Spoke about the fact that we will expand the check-in area, the baggage area, customs, immigration, as well as security. Mm-hmm. Just two artist impressions. Again, wide open spaces, something that we are quite precious about at the Cape Town International. So all of this is great for the airport. The airport is expanding, and that's fantastic. But we are also aware of the fact that in order to expand, you also need a sound social contract. Nearly 4 years ago, as a business, we adopted a sustainability framework, which gave us a keen awareness of the fact that as much as the business side of things is important, the environment is equally important, as is people and society. And so we have a very big focus on making sure that we work with the people around us and that we find ways to enable the communities that exist around us. So we speak often about how can we use our asset to improve the lives of the communities around us. The airport is thriving. We are world-class, we are award-winning, we are about to embark on a significant growth program, but we are surrounded by the most vulnerable citizens of Cape Town. We are surrounded probably by the poorest of the poor in Cape Town. And this is both a challenge but also an opportunity for us. And it is something that we actively focus on, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So this is just a quick picture of two projects. The one is the Symphony Way development, the other one is the Swartklip development, and it's a visual showcase of how those two projects fit into the broader airport precinct. And it also then pulls out Malawi Camp Freedom Farm and Blikkiesdorp. And those are three informal settlements, and I've got another picture where I just talk briefly about it. But if you look at your visual, you'll see a solid red line around the existing runway, and then a dotted red line around how we plan to realign the runway. And what that picture then looks like in relation to, if you move your eyes downward, to the Swartklip development. So Malawi Camp Freedom Farm and Blikkiesdorp, those are three very important communities to us. You will know that Blikkiesdorp is one of the oldest temporary relocation areas in the city. It was meant to be there as an interim measure. It is nearly 11 years old. Freedom Farm sits adjacent to the airport. If you see our airport perimeter fence, you can see the informal settlement right alongside it. So Freedom Farm exists on land, on airport land. Blikkiesdorp is important because they exist on future land that the airport will require for future growth. And then Malawi Camp, almost diagonally opposite to the airport, also sits under the flight path. And we have an agreement with the city that we signed in 2015 to relocate these communities into formal housing. These three communities are directly impacted by the runway program. We are very proud of the fact that we have this agreement in place, and it hasn't always been easy sailing, especially with the community. But what this agreement does is it gives everybody surety that ultimately they should be relocated into formal housing, giving the airport then the space to expand in the way in which it needs to. Areas A and B, those highlight the housing development, which is what the city will do. And then the purple block, area C, highlights the commercial development, which is what AXA will do. Again, it's not only about houses, but it's also about creating meaningful employment opportunities for the community. And then the top area signifies a green space. So when we talk about the construction programs, we talk about the opportunities that they also create for the communities around the airport. We have a bias towards communities within a 3 to 5 kilometer radius of the airport, and it is something that we are not shy to say. Again, simply because those are the communities who are probably the poorest in Cape Town. And one of the things we would like to see is for job opportunities, skills development, also supplier development opportunities to come into fruition as a result of the project. But right now in the year, there are a number of programs we already have in play. The first one is the Symphony Way development, where I signaled to you that in partnership with the city will run a housing development and we will implement a commercial development. We've also put in place a skills program where we've partnered with both Northland College as well as False Bay College to train these community members in house building programs, so that they have the necessary skills to be able to support and assist the contractor when they ultimately are in the process of house building. The communities of Freedom Farm and Malawi Camp have signaled to us that electrification is a significant problem for them. You can imagine that because they are temporary, they're not in a position to have formal electrification. Also with their location to the airport, that is also problematic. We are making a significant investment in the region of 4 million rand. We're partnering with Green Cape and we are looking at alternate energy solutions, and this is a program that is well advanced. And then finally, we also run a feeding scheme, not only in those three informal settlements, but also in the community of Klipfontein, so that we can feed the vulnerable members of the community, being specifically your elderly and your children. Possibly the definitely one of the more exciting developments that we have underway is the Swartklip development. We talk about Swartklip as a mixed-use development. And it falls in line with what we call the Erythropolis strategy. And the Erythropolis is all about creating spaces where people can live, work, play, and then I like to say that we've added the African component of spaces where people can learn. And an Erythropolis at its heart is about how do you use the airport or how do you leverage off of an airport that exists in your region to stimulate the economy around it. I showed you that picture previously, and here's another perspective. This is the airport. When you look at how we will shift and realign the runway, there's a perfect track that goes over the Swartklip site. And this will really be the future flight path that the airlines will use. When we went through our environmental impact assessment, this piece of land came up as a bit of an anomaly, and we had heard about intentions to build houses on what was this vacant piece of land. The impact of that would have quite a significant outcome in terms of noise. So the next slide speaks about why we then bought the land. If we were in a position to influence what activity would take place on the land, we could protect the future flight path of the airport. So the reason we bought the land was for aviation purposes. It had a clear aviation business case to it. If there weren't houses built within the flight path, we could also reduce the impact of noise on the communities. Also, it presented a fantastic commercial opportunity, and the more we got to know the site and understand the site, we also began to understand that it would have a positive social impact. So the Swartklip site is more commonly known as the Denal site. It's located between the areas, you can sort of see it on the next slide, on the left side. It's located between the areas of Mitchell's Plain and Khayelitsha, and this is where arms manufacturing took place in the past. We bought the land from Denal, and we speak about the airport opportunities that we protect into the future, but also we increasingly have the conversation around how does this site create opportunities for integration for these two communities. We have recently appointed a set of consultants, BET partnerships, to help us with urban design and the development framework for this site. A key component of what they are also assisting us with is the stakeholder engagement, and we had a brief conversation with Member McKenzie just before we started the meeting. It's quite a complex engagement process with the communities around us, but it's 500 hectares, so it's a huge tract of vacant land. And we sat in a meeting with some of the planners quite a while ago, some of the city planners, and they pulled that piece of land up. And when you look around it, it's got housing all around it, and there isn't really much opportunity for commercial development. And we think that this will be a fantastic catalyst to grow in the areas of Khayelitsha and Mitchell's Plain, just because of the commercial activity that it can ultimately attract. So four things we hope to ultimately do on this site is to have a component of housing, but to have the housing outside of the flight path. And the housing should also be mixed typologies. It should be mixed use housing so that it's not just your low-cost housing, but that we have in the past been told by community members that when we rise in the economic scale, we want to buy in our area, but we are forced to move out of our area. Why can't we have nice houses in this space? It would then have a component of education. We have signed a lease agreement with the False Bay College. They have fantastic, fantastic plans. I'm sure they'll be quite keen to share those with you as well. Ultimately, their dream is to possibly have one of the biggest training technical colleges on the site. They hope to start within the region of 3,000 students and ultimately grow that. There is a rigging center that is currently on site, and they have started some of their works. What they will do is repurpose some of the existing buildings. So as opposed to having to build from scratch, it makes better financial sense for them to be able to use some of the existing buildings and to repurpose that. We have signed for the housing component an agreement with the Housing Development Agency. They are the competent authority on housing. We have said to them on many occasions that whatever they do, they cannot do it in isolation of local and provincial, so that it's a collaborative approach, and so that what is ultimately put forward is something that is that the community is proud of and is also something that the community requires. A big portion of the site is environmentally sensitive, and I will do what my boss will do, is extend an invitation to actually take you out there if you have an interest. There are phenomenal dunes on the site, and there's quite a huge component of wetland as well. And of course, these environmentally sensitive areas, they have to be protected. We also plan to use portions of this as an offset for the work that we're doing on our runway. But there also has to be a balance between what we protect environmentally and what we make available for commercial development. So far you can see some of the numbers. These are some of the preliminary works that the BEP team have done, where we get a sense for what is possibly undevelopable versus what is potentially developable. We've only put these two slides on around the Swartklip site, and there really is a lot more that we could probably say to you, but what I do want to highlight is that it is our intention to go through a structured stakeholder engagement process. And we've also found that there is sometimes a view that things happen in secret and in little corners, and for us it's important that whatever we do on a transparent basis. It is our intention to, together with the BEP team, the consultants that we've appointed, to have an open day. We will advertise this open day in the local community newspapers. We will have the open day on the Swartklip site. It will happen in the first or the second week of October. And we'll actually invite the community in to give them a sense for what are the plans around the site. They can have the opportunity to ask questions. And this is a process that we are putting in place also in line with the broader process that we are undertaking with the sub-council. We meet with the five sub-councils of the affected areas, and it is our intention to put in place a public steering committee as nominated by the sub-council, where we can work with them and share information with them on an upfront basis. And then I think just finally to say that we value the partnership. What we do at the airport is not something that we do in isolation. The accolades that we receive is not because of the work that the AXA team does, but it really is a team effort that everybody touches and interfaces in. And we are readily available to engage and to share more information as and when required, and we just see today as a first step on that journey. Thank you so much. This is where the general manager will chime in for any questions that come through. We were supposed to share the presentation, but in the end it was just me. Thank you so much.
I'll open up for questions. Honorable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. It's really, I think this is what we were looking for when we wanted to see the presentation. A lot of the questions has been answered, but I am going to ask quite a bit of questions, Chair, if you allow me just a few minutes. Part of the reason why we have the presentation was because of community and several fringe groupings has been raising questions around what's going to happen with the SWAT, particularly the Swartklip site. So I'm going to start my questions in two lines, one on the Swartklip line, and second on the presentation, and just the third point will be part to be on just my lived experience at the Cape Town International Airport. So, I mean, the forward thinking and to buy that Swartklip site, I must think that's really appreciated, because I know 3 or so years ago there was, and I was part of the meeting where the discussion was just around, or even longer than that, the discussion was just around housing. Both houses shared between Kalisha and Mitchell's Plain, and get it over and done with. And it's great that the airports company and you, whoever was involved, had such forward thinking to integrate that site as part of what you're doing at the airport. When it comes to the openness and the last part, you said there's going to be first or second week in Manitoba in open meeting. And it's key in that you mentioned that we do advertise in local community newspapers, particularly in the placement of the people's force, so that the people in those areas can come to the meeting, so that unelected individuals don't come and speak on their behalf, so that they can have an input as to what's going to happen in this site. And as you say, what you've given us in terms of the overview and the master plan, so the people can see what can be done and what cannot be done. Because the perception of the message currently being sent by those aliens, you know, is that that's the site and the government don't want to do this on the site and that, while in the meantime, there are things you can do legitimately and that you can't do legitimately. So that 2 weeks is going to be key for us. When it comes to community involvement, what is the communication strategy with the community of Mitchell's Plain and Khayelitsha? And because I know there has been meetings held, and I think, and I know on the 20th of September there's another meeting on Falls Bay, I think they having that meeting, so that all communities, like all communities, are informed of these meetings. Because yes, the sub-councils are there, and they obviously put things, traditionally speaking, up in the walls, etc. But from a local communication perspective, the average person stays, particularly those at the farm, that stays right on the road, because that's my constituency, so I know the area quite well. They don't necessarily go to Lentegia sub-council to go see what's on the notice. They hear what the community and what people talk about in the local newspapers. So what's the communication strategy to keep them informed what's happening in Swartland? Because they are the first, the main neighbors of Swartland. And when we're talking about local labor and local supply development, because on one of your slides that you do mention, it's a key part of your focus, where do you advertise to get them involved, whether local labor or local supply development, so that the local rent seekers, and we know who they are, don't speak on their behalf? Because what you do find, in my experience, suddenly there's all these forums, this Mitchell's Plain Development Forum, this forum going up, and they purport to speak on behalf of local electricians or local plumbers or local builders, yet they're not speaking on behalf of anyone. So those are the people that call public representatives like myself and say, oh, I saw someone said this on Facebook, where is the database, where do I register? So how do you communicate those services to the community so that they can get involved, as opposed to via their sub-council, or even if it's a database that you work with the sub-council, where do they register? And then, when you have the public meetings, obviously the ones that have taken place are gone, but future public meetings, how would you encourage or work with the sub-council to ensure that everyone gets invited? Because you find the CPS, the neighborhood watches, traditionally the taxpayers, Colorado Taxpayers Association, the Mitchell's Plain United, traditionally those have been the voices of those communities. Because they have elected representatives, they have monthly public meetings, they normally advertise in the Plainsman or the People's Post. How do you work to ensure that those unelected forums that pop up every now and then don't become the official voice and doesn't necessarily is the voice of what the people of Mitchell's Plain wants? Because you see, because there's Facebook and there's social media, people think they tend to become the voice, but they're not the voice of the people because they're not elected or represented. So how do one get those organizations involved to avoid other people speaking on their behalf? And then the last point here, you talked about the Aerotropolis, and it's quite interesting because you said something that we're actually thinking about. When we're talking about airport, training port, seaport, and rail port, if you look at what has been done in the Netherlands, in Rotterdam, I'm sure you've been there, and how they've integrated that, and if you look at what Falls Bay College, and it's all nice and what Falls Bay College what to do. But I, for example, and this is my opinion, I foresee where there's a training facility, call it Falls Bay for training facility, where people can literally do the practical at the airport or at the airplanes, etc., and the training at Falls Bay. So they can literally walk from the one area to another, but under obviously the auspices of the airports company. And would bursaries then for the local communities then, training at Falls Bay, would airports company with all their partners, have the different employers working at airports, retailers and so, would you then work with them to ensure that the people in Mitchell's Plain and Khayelitsha and Sarans or Blikkiesdorp, some funny way, get bursaries so that they can actually go to those facilities? And Chairman, I'll leave that for now. Thank you.
Thank you.
any other questions? Honorable von der Westhuizen had their hand up earlier, and then afterwards, Honorable Kontlo.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies in advance because I've got 7 questions here. I'll try to be brief. The first one is, I have a college background myself, and education environments call for particularly low sound levels. If you could just, inform me, because you have said that what that site will be right in the future flight path. The second one is wetlands normally attract birds, and my impression is that birds and aeroplanes both fly, but they don't like flying in the same area. So if you could help me there. Then the third one is all these exciting plans of you require money, and you will probably have to go and borrow that money. And my question is then just, will your rates and taxes for, airlines using your facilities, will that be competitive? And perhaps you can just inform us of how your rates currently compare to that of other local and international airports. I believe that Lanseria might be a private airport. Are you able to compete with private enterprise in this regard? Then the fourth one is most major airports have got shuttle service, rail shuttle services or rail commuter transport terminals. Cape Town hasn't got that. Does that include, or is that included in your future plans? The fifth one is, if you could just perhaps on your presentation show us specifically where is the Stellenbosch Arterial Road, and where is the existing terminal building on that master plan of yours, because I don't seem to recognize the roof structure that is currently there. And then I don't know if you're able, if you only represent Cape Town Airport, or whether you would be able to tell us about the general airports company planning for the expansion in air transport. I think you're in the very fortunate position that, the whole world is moving towards air transport. It's the one public transport mode that is probably the fastest growing, I presume. What is the future for further Western Cape airports or expansion? We've got the George Airport already, and I do believe that some expansions are planned there as well. But if you could comment on perhaps alternative ones like Plettenberg Bay. By the way, some of these members need to be in Plettenberg Bay next Tuesday. So obviously I was inquiring as to the possibility of having a flight straight to Plett as well. And then the last question, and I hope this is not a curveball. Some years ago, the city of Cape Town said that some of its poorest, or some of its debtors with outstanding municipal accounts include public entities and public buildings and so on. And I remember seeing the Cape Town airport there as well, and Cape Town saying, but it's one of those key strategic points. We cannot cut the water supply to the airport. We cannot cut the electricity supply to the airport. Can you assure us today that either your municipal accounts are up to date, or B, you've got an agreement with the city of Cape Town your commitments in that regard? Thank you.
Honorable Kondlo, and then I'm going to allow the committee then afterwards to answer, and then we'll take another round of questions.
No, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My first question is that if the team can just give me an indication of the bulk figure of this development, and where is the funding coming from? Because I can see in some of the elements that in your partnership with the City of Cape Town, and I think there's housing development. I'm not sure whether that will be funded by the National Department of Housing in terms of those housing development. If you can just give me a clarity there about the funding structure of this particular project. But also, again, on the funding itself, what was the cost of the swap clip, and what becomes your financial obligations there, as you are saying that there is the biggest chunk, I think, there, if I'm understanding properly, is that it would be the mixed use, and maybe you can little bit just indicate to me the extent of your financial obligations into the swap clip development. And then my second part of question is more on the developmental aspects of this project that you have outlined, some covered by Member McKenzie on the communication strategies with the community members, and how are you managing such, especially because I think earlier on you spoke about an agreement with communities that would be relocated, and one would be interested of the management of that particular process, understanding how we have observed communities, you know, and their engagement with government these days. So for me, it's interesting to understand how that particular strategy between yourselves and the city, because I'm not hearing what exactly are those community platforms, you know, of both those that are organized and those that are unorganized, you know, able to interface with you and commit when time comes. If you say it's a relocation, how do you deal with people who says we're not moving? You know, so how are you managing that particular process? For me, it is something interesting I would like to hear. And I wanted to check whether, I think there's a study here, I see you make reference that you, I'm not sure whether it's your study of the PwC. If it is, I'm sure, Chair, I would request a copy of the study to share with us, because I'm assuming that this particular study would have given you an indication of the type of socioeconomic profile of the area, which I'm seeing that it was done in 2017, and already in 2015 you had already concluded an MOA with the city of Cape Town. Because one is interested indeed about the community beneficiation you have, I think in one slide. And if I can just ask specifics there, you know, of the type of the skills program, I see you've got North College and False Bay. Have those programs started? What type of training is this? And what type of exit strategies that exist? You know, because one of the things about such huge development is the expectations that they create. And at times, those expectations are not met because the entire ecosystem was not properly, you know, outlined of who participates, how do they participate, where are the opportunities, who has confirmed those opportunities, because some of those opportunities may not necessarily be commitments of government. They may rely on private players that are going to come there, which sometimes there is little that government could do to prescribe to them for the uptake of those particular skills. So I'm interested to understand, and is there a document one can get to outline exactly these beautiful plans that you are relating here, including what do you mean about the supplier development opportunities beyond the construction that you are raising? Because I think those are also, in my view, include that communication that Member McKenzie was talking about, because if there is such anxiety amongst communities, it's along the type of beneficiation that they may assume, you know, to be coming. And indeed, we know sometimes the challenges within community structures. So it's important to understand how are those actually managed, you know, between, yes, the politicians in as far as the sub-council is concerned, and the ordinary members of those communities. So I think, for me, I think I'm very much interested in that, and the extent to which your socio-economic study that you have done what it has given you in terms of the state of readiness, you know, of these communities in as far as the envisaged skill, the envisaged enterprise development entities, if there are, you know, because you don't want to get at that point and you are looking for, yes, a plumber, but a particular level of plumbing that may not be in that 5 kilometer radius. And because of that, you know, you'll have to then go and take a plumber 10 or 15 kilometers, and communities are then going to be up in arms saying that you promised them these opportunities. So I'm just wanting to understand how, given the experiences of many of other projects, how have you managed to actually, you know, think through those within your developmental or the transformation element of this project? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks. I'm going to allow the department to answer, and then afterwards I will allow for another round of questions.
Thank you, Chair. Deirdre said if she does the presentation, I have to bat the questions. I'm now wondering whether I got a good deal here. Maybe I should have done the presentation. No, Chair, just on a serious note, I just want to say first and foremost thank you for these questions. I say this carefully, my biggest criticism generally today is that we deal with things in a very academic manner. So the questions that I hear from the community members are very specific and very real, and it also shows, you know, that people understand there's a seriousness around this. I must confess, the first time I spent time in these communities, my first visit to one of the informal settlements, we always believe we understand a space, but once you get into a space, and maybe I must just say to the Honourable Member Mkondlo that one of the informal settlements is Freedom Farm, and I walked this morning into the shack, and there were rocks on the floor, and I could understand that. I was, what is that for? And then it was explained to me, that's for when the water comes, so that people stay out of the water. Then you start to understand. When you are there, and last year, I think it was in December, a granny that was 91 years old out of Blikkiesdorp got her first house. Then you start to understand these things are very real, and you can't deal with them in an academic manner. I just want to go back, if I can, through the questions one by one. First in to Honourable Member McKenzie. Swartklip, I must say to you, sir, that initially we had to learn a few lessons. So we never planned on buying Swartklip initially. We had very specific plans of land acquisition. We had to buy all the land, and we'll get to where the borders are. But if you picture the airport, where the current airport is, and then you've got Stellenbosch Arterial as the one boundary, you've got the N2 as the other boundary, and you've got Symphony Way. So we had put forward proposals to our board and recommendations to acquire all of that land. It was sitting with various government departments, from national to provincial. Some of it sat with other entities. And we, over the last almost 6 years, we went through a process of acquiring all of those land parcels, some of it from provincial government also. Those transactions have all concluded or in the final processes of concluding. We never envisaged to buy Swartklip, but in this EIA process that we did with the runway, we realized more and more, as the address said, the strategic importance of that runway. Currently, we send all our aircraft over Mitchell's Plain, and the impact that has on the Mitchell's Plain community is very, very significant. So with this realignment, and we're doing that for that reason, but for other reasons as well, because if you look at the prevailing weather conditions in south, east, north, west, and you consult our pilots and our technical team, they'll tell you that's the best configuration. So we're improving the operational capability at the airport by realigning the runway, but it so happens that we also then take the traffic mainly away from built-up areas, i.e. Mitchell's Plain and Khayelitsha, and we send it over Swartklip. So Swartklip came into being, and we then decided to acquire it. There was a question, what did we pay? I'm always reluctant with specific numbers, but maybe I could just say to the committee, we paid less than 200 million for the site. And I'll get to why we believe there is a potential business case. But I first want to just deal with the question from a community perspective. So what we initially did is we needed to understand more about the site. The HDA was going to buy the site for housing, as you correctly say. there was going to be houses over that site for as far as possible, long as possible. And all it would have done is perpetuate this bad historic planning. The typical Swartklip is old apartheid planning, if you think about it. You've got two communities and they are separate, purposefully separated by government-owned property, and just to make sure you put military in there. So we then understood that this property, first strategic importance for the airport, if we develop it in a way that makes sense, we can also then reverse some of that historic bad planning and start integrating communities in a way that makes a lot more sense. But initially, we didn't know much about the site. We didn't know the community. So everyone that came talking to us, and there were various structures, both from Khayelitsha and from Mitchell's Plain, some more organized than others, and we spoke to all of them. But we realized that it's not sustainable. So what we did about a year ago, maybe 8 months ago, we then realized, let's get the councillors, the sub-council managers for those areas, and we brought them all into a room. We've now had about 3 working sessions, and we've got agreed a protocol and process that everyone that's going to engage us on the steering committee for that site will work through the sub-council, through the elected officials. We also, they will bring all other community-based structures into the process through the sub-council, and we will make sure that not one dominates above the other. So really trying to balance that. So I've actually had to offer my sincere apologies to the councillors, sub-councils, because I think initially we didn't handle the engagement correctly, and I think it created some of the difficulties that we saw. But I'm happy to say in the last couple of months we're back on track. And in fact, there are 2 things that Deirdre talked about, the open day. We will make sure that gets published. It's really just an opportunity for people to come in and see what we're thinking. And then also, the next engagement we're going to have is with the sub-council and council managers, and they're going to bring also interested parties within their constituencies into the room, and that's also limited according to a certain protocol. So from that perspective, we take notes, and we will make sure that the communication is structured and is done through elected officials. There will be no gatekeepers, and there will be no people that will claim ownership of anything. It really isn't what we intend, and we will not perpetuate that type of conversation. I must just say that the development on its own is one of the most exciting, that the metro is going to see. There was a question about the size of bulk on that site. We saw that of the 500 hectares, we probably will get close to developing 200 hectares. I must confess, we still would like to push that a bit further. We think 300 hectares for green space is a bit generous in an area such as Mitchell's Plain and Khayelitsha, where the needs are so great. So we will, through the process that we're embarking upon, but if you translate the 200 hectares into bulk, we probably, honorable member, we'll probably sit now at about 1.2, 1.3 million square meters. Now, if you compare that with Century City, I think it's at 2.6, if I'm not mistaken. We can only appreciate that what we are talking about here is not a... This will change the city. It will change the city. It will change the metro and the province. It will be a game changer, and that in an area, as Deirdre said, which is most needed, and it's just in the right place at the right time. So that's why we also have opted not to go to council or to city do application for zoning for some pockets or parcels of land. We're taking the whole concept, and that concept, that whole development framework, will be influenced by communities, shaped by communities, by province, by city. We have had variants. We've been fortunate. We've taken the... He was then the MEC, he's now the Premier. We've taken him to Swartklip. We've had the city mayoral committees. We've had our partners on air access, and the department has been there. We've had fantastic support. So anything that comes out of that framework that we'll take to city for zoning rights will be shaped by all concerned. And it will be a game changer. And therefore it will... It has to be done in this on a structured basis. Just want to say to the honourable member for Navestas, and you're 100% right. Obviously, with the noise, we have to be careful. The noise zones are the green areas. It is. I thought it was coincidental. It's not coincidental. The winds that are influencing our operations and our pilots at the airport are the same winds that shape those dunes and creates those wetlands. It's on the southeast northwest, and we will fly over the green zone, which is a noise zone. There are areas outside of that which is available for development. One of the inputs we had in the EIA process was also with province, and particularly about what guidelines we can use in terms of where we can still develop. So there are areas that are open to development, and there are areas that you can develop with some sound mitigation. Obviously, some of the development industrial has got no issue with sound. And by the way, if I may say, Chair, the college, the Falls Bay College, is actually a technical training facility. So this is typical where you use workshop benches and machines. In fact, they've got an 85 decibel rating, and we probably going to operate between 60 and 65 in the heavy noise zones. In the area where the campus is, it's even less than that. So the compatibility is there. I must also just say, as far as the campus, yes, Falls Bay will be a first and an anchor, but that it's not exclusive. So we are actually wanting to encourage all institutions of learning, so that if you reside in Mitchells Plain or Khayelitsha, you've got access to quality education on your doorstep. You don't need to travel and get into and spend a lot of money to get to quality education. So the campus is much bigger than just Falls Bay College. It's a broader campus, and we hope to really encourage all institutions of learning to set up a footprint there. On the wetlands and the birds, yes, wetlands and birds. It so happens that at that stage, our aircraft, and obviously in terms of the EIA, we did significant studies, but you don't have a significant bird risk at that altitude. We're obviously already at altitude at that stage, not like on airport. The issue of birds on airport is a big issue where we do water ponding, because there the aircraft are vulnerable when they're still on lower levels. The money and the funding, and I think we're still on your questions here, Honourable Flavestes, and AXA is 26 years, I know. I think it's our 26 years celebration this year. We have never had to rely on any bailouts or government funding. We are absolutely independent. We do self-fund, and we don't have enough for self-funding, we do go to market and we do loans. And we've been doing that for many years, and we do that successfully. Yeah, how that impacts on our airport taxes, it's often called airport taxes. And I must say the department here is also always keeping us on our toes as far as that is concerned. I think it was about 3 years ago, two, 3 years, we reduced our tariffs by 35%, our taxes. And that was as part of a broader consultation with the airline fraternity to understand, you know, what is the impact of air travel, looking at what type of investments. And I think what I'm really very pleased with, and I must say this, even with those reductions, we had a very supportive industry, the airline industry out there, that said, given what's happening in Cape Town, and this air access has been a game changer. Our partners in province, city, Westgro, led by Westgro, this is under the Westgro banner as the managing entity. Deirdre showed you the detail, you saw the detail, but what essentially has happened, we've almost doubled our international traffic over the last 4 years. 10 years ago, international traffic at Cape Town Airport was probably about 10% of total. We're now going to 25% of total. That is significant, and that's all international direct traffic. And because of the additional traffic growth that we've achieved, which I must say, ahead of our peers, we were then able to secure enough confidence to get the funding that we require for this investment program. This investment program is 7 billion rand, and that program will be over the next 5 years. And in terms of that program, the funding of it and the impact it has on our tariffs and taxes are carefully managed by our regulator and by the industry at large, and there are no significant spikes that will happen in that regard. We obviously also focus very strongly not just on running tariffs, but we also run a commercial business, so we have strong retail and property development. So Swartklip is a good example, is that with other opportunities of getting returns and income, we are able to mitigate the impact that any developments have on our tariffs. The rail link as it is planned, it's in our master plan. As yet, maybe just realistically where we are as a region, it's not been a priority. We would love for it to be something that will come in sooner than later. In fact, one of the informal settlements that are moving, Malawi Camp, is actually in the footprint of where the rail link will come through, but it is incorporated into our... We would love that rail link to also pass through onto Khayelitsha, so that it passes through as opposed to just coming into the airport and returning. And that is a conversation which we'll keep on having going forward. But I must say it's not part of our plans in the next 5 years. Another issue for us, you heard that we're moving 2 million litres of aviation fuel a day in peak. We're doing that all by trucks. 40,000 litres in one truck, so you can imagine between 50 and 60 trucks a day. That's the size and the nature of the operation. And also a fuel pipeline will become more important for us going forward. So the rail link and the fuel pipeline are critical investments going forward. The Stellenbosch arterial, maybe if I can just offer, we can just show you. But it really hugs the one boundary. You'd like to just go back to that. See, it's not a good picture. You know what? Go to the overhead that shows this one just from the air. Yeah, there we go. Just show there where is Stellenbosch arterial. If I may be so. So this is the airport. This side, this is the current runway. This is the new runway. This is Southwood. This is the two houses in front. That's another 70 acres of commercial zone. This is Blikkiesdorp. As you can see, eventually, 10, 15 years from now, we're going to build another runway. So Blikkiesdorp moves. So now we can see. Just on.
Can we just direct the questions through the chair, but also can we wait for them to finish the questions and then we're going to open up for next round of questions and follow ups as well, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Then I just want to say, in terms of acts of general group expansion, yes, there are plans for our other airports. I must say, I don't have all that detail. We work very closely with George Airport, being also in the province. I know Westgrove is also very active in that space. Plet is not one of our airports. I think previously there's been some engagement. If we can and whenever we have to support them, we will also do that. Just in terms of outstanding debt over the city, I wasn't aware that we owe the city money. The mayor hasn't phoned me yet. He normally does. But I must say, no, for us, that is a critical. So we pride ourselves on being a regular payer. In fact, we also pride ourselves on being probably one of the top rate payers, probably in the top 5 or top 10 of the city. I must just say one thing on water, if I may. This issue of water scarcity and the risk that we had was a big scare. Worried all of us. So what we did, Chair, if I can just free you say to yourself and the committee, we then, they say never waste a good crisis, so we learned from that, and what we then did is we explored and we found significant water reserves under the airfield. We tapped into that and we're actually now able to be running totally self-sufficient, not only for operations, but also for the purposes of construction. On a busy construction day, we're gonna need we need 1 million litres of water just for construction. The scope of this development that we are is very ambitious. And I think when one of the things, Chair, that we would like to ask you and the committee, and obviously your voice is an important one, we're going to plan very carefully and we'll make sure we inconvenience people as little as possible. But it's also, it is going to be a significant challenge for us to manage operations and construction. At the same time, we're going to be spending on average 100 to 150 million rand per month, every month for the next 5 years on investment, on putting structures into the ground. Our ability, therefore, to manage that, and we've done it. I must say, we've got a very strong and competent team. We've planned carefully and prepared well, but it's going to be, we'll have to make sure we minimize the impact of that as well. Okay, then just in terms of Honorable Makondo that asked about the bulk figure, I think I've responded to that. We hope to even improve on that because we really think there's an opportunity to do so. The funding structure, Swartklip for us, the only area that Axel is very precious about is the green area, the runway strip. As for the remainder, we will facilitate a process with our communities, with local and provincial governments, and all the other inputs we get in making sure we get the right vision and dream for that property. And then it will be a development project. We will either on sell or develop. One of the things we would be keen to do is to do developments with community structures as well. That hasn't been defined yet. We've heard and learned that very strongly through some of the engagements, but we'll make sure that gets defined as part of the process. We might, what we have done in other cases in Johannesburg, we might even opt to put it in a separate management structure, a subsidiary of sorts. Might be a structure that partners with province and city to also make sure it's more efficient or more effective. We don't know. We're at that stage where we're still shaping that type of thinking. The Swartklip development, the only entity that's really now doing projects on the site is the campus. City gave us a 10-year temporary departure after a public consultation process, which allows the campus to happen without us waiting for zoning approval, which could take 2 years or 3 years. These processes are sometimes quite intense. So we don't delay the campus, and that's why the first building has been completed. And I would also echo what Deirdre is saying. Chair, we would like to invite you and your committee, if there's an opportunity, maybe not only to visit Swartklip, but also to visit some of our community structures. I'm thinking of Plikkiesdorp, thinking of Freeman Farm and Malawi Camp, because Honourable Member, you raised something about being authentic with your communities and managing expectations. That is so true. So I must say, there's not a... every 2 months we meet with the leadership of each of these structures. They are well structured, well organized, great leadership. We have actually funded leadership programs for the community leaders. We work with them on anything and everything. I was with Deirdre with Plikkiesdorp last Monday evening with the mayor. They asked us if we can facilitate also bringing the mayor on board. And on request, the mayor joined us and we went into. So it's very real. The issue of expectations and commitments, we try and manage that very carefully. So this skills program was an initial program. I think we initially put a funding of almost 5 million. Our partners, Falls Bay College, went to the CETA, secured another 5 million, and then the city also came on board. And what this does is there's 150 learners. Some of them are doing the full house building program, so it takes a year. And in fact, I think the last students are graduating, end of September, graduating. In fact, it would be very nice if we can even extend the invitation at the graduation ceremony to the committee. They will graduate, and some of them would have done a year program. Some of them would have done a shorter program focused on plumbing or some of the sub-disciplines. One of the amazing things that we learned, Chair, is when we went into these communities, there were a lot of people there that already knew how to do the jobs. They just don't have the accreditation. So one of the processes we also embarked upon is to help those people to secure formal qualifications because they already know how to do the work. So that program, and we are not sure whether we are. We would like to do another round, if our funds allow for it, because the programs are quite... but also, we make sure that there's commitment from the community members. Half of the 150 students are, by the way, women. And if I may say so, the women seem to be building better homes than the men. But I'm always told that there's no surprises with that. So from that side as well, it's real, it's practical, and it's happening. The city agreement that we had with... the three informal settlements. We signed that agreement in 2015, and it is already well shared, that document. Chair, if required, we can share that agreement, just for information purposes. I must really say to the city and city leadership, we really appreciate the commitment they made. They've appointed their professionals. They are busy with final tender documents. They hope, the city is hoping to go to market soon now, and they will start with the services early next year, and towards the end of next year they start with the home building. It's very ambitious. It's those two yellow areas, it's about 3,000 homes that are going in there. To move 3,000 families is big. I must say already from those three communities, probably 600 people have already moved to various housing projects. So it's not that everyone's waiting for those two areas to happen. There's been relocation over the last, since we signed the agreement, there's been gradual relocation, so it's a process. And yes, this is a real commitment. Those budgets are firm. The steering committees and the project meetings that happen, the community leadership are on the, they are represented, they're in the room with the professionals and the engineers. And for me, one of the most powerful things is when some of the officials refer to the agreement of 2015 and the community members say, sorry, can I just correct you? That paragraph said this, it didn't say that. So no, it's very real, and for that we're very grateful. Just having a quick look here, city involvement. The city is integrally involved in this. We don't move without them. And I must say again, it's just the commitment's there. The PW study, certainly, we'll make a copy of that available. The skills program, we started that about 2 years ago. And I think I've briefed on that. Then in terms of supply development, and I'll just wrap up with that. I hope I've answered all the questions. The tenders that are going out, one of the things that came out of the Swartklip engagement is, and also with the three informal settlements, is the issue of localization. What we then did is, on request, we went to Treasury, National Treasury Chair, and we requested an opportunity to apply localization in quite a narrow form for these developments. National Treasury then cautioned us and said, no, you have to be careful. In fact, they told us we can't do it. I'm being a bit diplomatic. They did say, however, there are things that you can do to encourage. There's no restriction on labor. You are able to localize, and through the council, sub-councils, and even where we have our informal settlements, we will be able to say to these contractors, you know, this is where you can get access to the communities and the community members. So we work very hard in making sure that with these projects, there's every and any opportunity to also push the agenda very hard in terms of skills development and employment, and in doing so, as part of this broader, getting people into homes, getting them jobs, getting them skills. So we're very positive that with these investments, and if I may say so, I see contract, first the market, these contractors are really looking for work, and I also see contractors that you don't have to tell anymore, you know, get communities on board. If they don't have communities on board with projects, those projects don't happen. And therefore I'm very positive that we're going to have everyone focused in the right direction, and we'll deliver eventually outcome here, which is a fantastic airport that will continue to serve the province and the city and the country for that matter in a way which will make all of us proud, but it will do so on a basis that it will take the communities with you. I want to conclude just on the security side of things. I just want to say to the committee, it's not all moonshine and roses. The one thing that's very real to us is the issue of security and the security risk. Interesting, if you build stronger relationships, the social compact that Deirdre spoke of with your communities, they become your first protectors. We've got a 13-kilometer perimeter fence which from time to time people breach or try and breach. It's often the first call we get is not from our security, it's from the communities to say, look there, you've got a problem there, you've got a problem there. And that also tells me where we are with our communities, where they part, they own the airports and they really associate with it. But it doesn't take away from the fact that we still have real problems. There are mornings where we hear, and I know we all hear that protest action here and there. We've had incidents on the N2. We have had to deploy people on foot on that 30-kilometer fence. We've got lights, we've got cameras, we've got detection, we've got vehicles. My constant, my regular engagement with the mayor, with the premier, is that this issue of security, it's going to take one incident, it's going to really impact on all of us. So whatever, and again, it's ongoing with all the right structures, SAPS, law enforcement, everyone, that we are doing that. But if I can ask the committee, if I can use this opportunity to say to the committee, whatever you can do to also support that, in terms of how we resource around this, how we, you know, there's the community CPF structures, there's the neighborhood watch programs, there are various initiatives. But we still find that some mornings, to start up that airport, that machine, takes a bit of doing. And some days we even have a challenge getting our staff safely into that airport. That's real. Where we have incidents of rocks in the road or stone throwing, our staff have to be in that airport from 4 o'clock in the morning to be ready for the first passengers arriving any time after 4:30. That's the crews that will take the aircraft out. That's the people that check you in. That's all the retail shops. So if there is something that I just would like to bring to the attention of the committee, is the security agenda. You know, we've got lots of work, all of us collectively, to do, and we will appreciate any support that you can also give us in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, before I open up the questions, my non-honorable members, and also had a follow-up question, can I urgently request a comfort break for 5 minutes?
Thank you.
Thank you.